Well, good afternoon, everybody out there listening to the Brian Chronicles. This is Phyllis, filling in for Kelly this week. We have a very special guest today, Barbara Aho, and we've enjoyed every time that she comes on. She's just so full of information, and I'm going to turn it over to her right now. Barbara, you there?
Yes, thank you, Phyllis. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, I'll try to speak loud.
Okay, just speak into the phone and take it from here.
All right, thank you. I'd like to talk today about the tribulation counterfeits. That is, those major factors in the tribulation which the occult societies will counterfeit in order to deceive the masses. And I'd like to start with two scriptures in Matthew, two words of warning that Jesus spoke to his disciples. Matthew 7:13-14, "Enter ye in at the strait gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat, because strait is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth to life, and few there be that find it." And in Matthew 24:24, he admonished, "For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets that shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect." And here we see that the masses, the many, are deceived, whereas it is only the few who manage to escape deception. And we have our Lord's warning here that this is the case and that we need to beware. And I want to talk about how the end-time conspirators manage to pull this massive deception off, where the masses of people are deceived and only a few manage to escape deception. And I want to start by talking about some of the dynamics that have gone on prior to when these counterfeits will come on the world stage. I want to talk, first of all, about the dialectical process, which is used as a mind control operation. The idea of the dialectical process is to mobilize popular opinion and then to transform it into an instrument of revolution. What they do, what the conspirators do, is to polarize the masses, and then they control and direct both sides until the desired synthesis is achieved. Now, this strategy has been imposed on every sector of society, not just the past few years, but for centuries, even millennia. They have been using this mind control operation to brainwash the masses, and the sad fact is that very few are immune to the dialectical process, because we all have our opinions, we all have our biases, we all have our belief systems that we hold to, and we tend to think in terms of black and white, good and evil. It never occurs to us that the same people might be controlling both sides of an issue with the purpose of bringing about conflict and then inserting into this conflict their own solution. So I want to just give some examples. Of course, we're all aware of the controversy, the controlled conflict between right and left, between ultra-conservative and liberal, and the political parties in our own country, the United States. But how many people are aware that in the late 19th century, the House of Rothschild sent Jacob Schiff to the United States to gain control of both the Republican and Democratic parties? Now, what we have seen over the past 100 years has been this dialectical process in operation. The political, our rulers, our senators, our congressmen, what they do is to agitate their own constituents with a lot of rhetoric, but things are only getting worse. And the situation we see today is that there's really not much difference between the Republican and Democratic parties. And yet, your average Republican and your average Democrat is holding fast to the principles that they believe, little realizing that the conflict is managed and will come to a solution that neither of them really wants or believes in. The same thing happened with communism and fascism. Jacob Schiff, along with the Rothschilds and the Warburgs, planned and financed the Russian Revolution. Now, the Nazi Revolution was also financed by Rothschild and Warburg, along with Averill Harriman and Prescott Bush. But here you have the same powerful power elites controlling these two powerful ideologies that have transformed the world. And, of course, they have an agenda. They are going to bring about a world totalitarian government under themselves. Now, today we see the conflict between the Muslims and the Jews. And your average man in the street thinks that the Muslims just hate the Jews and vice versa. But how many people know that Albert Pike wrote a letter to Giuseppe Mazzini, who was the head of Italian Freemasonry, actually stating that World War III would be brought about by agitating the Muslims against the Jews. He said the Third World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences caused by the agency of the Illuminati between the political Zionists and the leaders of the Islamic world. Now, he wrote this in 1871. The war must be conducted in such a way that Islam, the Muslim Arabic world, and political Zionism, and in parentheses, the State of Israel, mutually destroy each other. Now, keep in mind that at that time, the State of Israel was not even in existence, but the Freemasons knew the plan and what was going to happen and how they were going to bring it about through the dialectical process. And then he goes on to state, meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on this issue, will be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economic exhaustion. So they knew that this conflict between Muslim and Jew was going to draw in the whole world into a world war that would serve their ends. Now, we also see today the agitation going on by the Muslim between the Muslims and the Christians. And that, too, has been entirely provoked and controlled. It's a controlled conflict. Years ago, we began to see, or at least I began to notice, the anti-Muslim propaganda coming into the Christian community and in the churches, and horrible reports of Muslim atrocities against Christians. And of course, none of it was documented, but the Christians in the United States and probably other parts of the world have been propagandized to believe that the Muslims are all terrorists, that their Quran preaches violence. And while I'm not in any way condoning Islam, a lot of this is simply not true, but in the same way, the Muslims have been brainwashed to believe that the Christians are all terrorists, that we approve, that we all approve of this war of aggression in the Middle East. And so you have the Muslims versus the Christian dialectic going on. Then, during the Protestant Reformation, what was in play there was the dialectical operation. Catholic versus Protestant. And few Christians understand what really was going on at that time. The Pope, in the Reformation Pope, Leo X, was actually Giovanni Medici. The House of Medici was a Jewish, very wealthy Jewish house. And the Pope, Pope Leo, simply became intransigent against Martin Luther and his demands. And, of course, there's some questions about Martin Luther as well and his motives. Not that I am in any way for the doctrines of the Catholic Church, but I want to read what one Merovingian Jewish website has to say about the Reformation. In one fell swoop, the Christian world was cleft in twain. No longer would Rome be able to raise great armies from its subject nations to crush heresies wherever the papal finger pointed. There was no longer just one big boy on the block. Another had moved in. The mightiest church in the world that the world had ever known had been divided and conquered. And this is the objective of the dialectical processors who create revolutions and movements to divide the masses and to obtain their own objectives. And then we have the conflict that has been ongoing between secular humanism and Christianity. And Albert Pike also wrote concerning this conflict that they were going to unleash on the world. And this was in the 19th century. He wrote this: "We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism, origin of savagery, and of the most bloody turmoil. Then everywhere the citizens obliged to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries will exterminate those destroyers of civilization. And the multitude, disillusioned with Christianity, whose deistic spirits will from that moment be without compass or direction, anxious for an ideal, but without knowing where to render its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, finally brought out in the public view. This manifestation will result from the general reactionary movement, which will follow the destruction of Christianity and atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time." So you see the conflict that is raging between secular humanism and Christianity has all been orchestrated by the Judeo-Freemasons, and the end is the destruction of both, and to bring in the pure doctrine of Lucifer, the Luciferian doctrine of the Freemasons. Now, I want to read an excerpt from Marilyn Ferguson's book, Aquarian Conspiracy. Marilyn Ferguson, of course, is a well-known New Ager. And a chapter of her book is entitled The Politics of the Radical Center. And she describes the mind control operation that goes on as these conspirators work their revolution and manage the controlled conflicts through movements. What happens to these movements? Okay, and I'm quoting from her chapter, The Politics of the Radical Center. Oh, and the whole point is that people join these movements holding to their belief system, but at the end, they will synthesize the extremes, right and left, Christianity and atheism, but that into a center, what they call a synthesis, which is supposed to represent both sides, but it really represents neither. It's radical. It's something that neither side would want. Okay, and I'm quoting her: "Most historical movements have their last will and testament along with their manifesto. They have known more surely what they oppose than what they are. By taking a firm position, they trigger an inevitable countermotion, one that will disorient their fragile identity almost at once. You see, as you get involved in these movements, you lose your perspective. You're so busy fighting the enemy that Christians, for example, lose what the gospel is all about in their own minds, and they begin fighting social causes, and they begin getting their eyes on temporal matters and off of the true mission of the church, which is to preach the gospel. Now, Marilyn Ferguson didn't say that. I interjected it. Okay, then I'm going on quoting her. Then what happens is rapid metamorphosis and self-betrayal. Pacifists who become violent, law and order advocates who trample law and order, patriots who undo liberties, and don't we see that at this very moment in time where the Patriot Act, which is supported by myriads of Christians across the nation, are undoing the very liberties that they think they're fighting to preserve. Okay, Marilyn Ferguson goes on, people's revolutions that empower new elites, and that's exactly what's going to happen. New movements in the arts that become as rigid as their predecessors, romantic ideals that lead to genocide. And I want to quote from an article that has recently been written on our website, a young person who is a watchman on our email list. When he read my report on the death of the Phoenix, he thought of the Columbine massacres and all of the occult signatures of this massacre, and how the very people who were the victims and the victims' families are actually working to bring about a revolution. And he tied it in with, of course, the Civil War, the American Civil War that I talked about and wrote about in the Death of the Phoenix, which refers to the demise of the United States. And I would just like to quote from his the conclusion of his article. He's writing about Daryl Scott. Daryl Scott was the father of Rachel Scott, who was one of the Columbine victims, and how Daryl Scott is helping to mobilize the youth revolution, which is going to end up as Joel's army. And he wrote, it is ironic that Rachel Scott said she wanted to start a chain reaction of kindness, and Eric Harris, one of the shooters at Columbine, wanted to start a chain reaction. Did I say Rachel Scott wanted to start a chain reaction of kindness, and Eric Harris wanted to start a chain reaction of violence? What is really ironic, though, is that the Star Wars allegorizes what possibly could happen. Before the rise of the Empire, the galaxy wanted the Trade Federation to be stopped by the new clone stormtroopers of Star Wars. But eventually, it was those same stormtroopers and their leader, Emperor Palpatine, who became the very bad people they've sworn to protect everyone from. So it shall be with Joel's army. Even now, many Christians and non-Christians have claimed that George Bush is using the war on terror as an excuse to take away American freedom. Likewise, Rachel Scott may have preached kindness to counteract Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold's chain reaction of violence. But by her family's encouraging a youth revolution, they have caused the very thing they claimed to be against. And then he goes on to say, the Scots and many others have been a catalyst for the rise of Joel's army and have started a chain reaction of violence. And for now, I'm going to say more about the Columbine event in a few minutes, but I'd like to now quote from the Protocols of the Elders, the Learned Elders of Zion of the 33rd Degree. And this has to do, this is from Section 17 of the Protocols, where they spell out their agenda and their modus operandi to to infiltrate and to divide and to conquer. And I quote, "For a time, perhaps, we might be successfully dealt with by a coalition of the Goyim all over the world, but from this danger we are secured by the discord existing among them, whose roots are so deeply seated that they can never now be plucked up. We have set one against another, the personal and the national reckonings of the Goyim, religious and race hatreds, which we have fostered into a huge growth in the course of the past 20 centuries. This is the reason why there is not one state which would anywhere receive support if it were to raise its arm, for every one of them must bear in mind that any agreement against us would be unprofitable to itself." They go on to say, "We're too strong. The nations cannot come to even an inconsiderable private agreement without our secretly having a hand in it." You see, infiltrate, divide, and conquer through the fomenting of hatreds, religious and race hatreds. And the protocols go on to say, "To sow discord in all parties, to dislocate all collective forces which are still unwilling to submit to us, and to discourage any kind of personal initiative which might in any degree hinder our affair. Throughout all Europe, and by means of relations with Europe and other continents also, we must create ferments, discords, and hostility. Therein we gain a double advantage. In the first place, we keep in check all countries, for they well know that we have the power wherever, whenever we like, to create disorders or to restore order. If this world grows agitated, the meaning of that will be that we have had to stir it up in order to break up its too great solidarity." So here they tell why they must foment these discords and revolutions. They have to break up any solidarity that might rise up and recognize their hand in creating revolution, in promoting their own agenda, and to break up that solidarity, whether it's religious, political, whatever. So, the ultimate objective, I think, of the dialectical process, there is a method to all of this madness. Besides world domination, in order to get there, to get to that point where they dominate the world, they will use these conflicts and fomenting of race hatred, religious hatred, political hatreds for the creation of villains. Now, these are people who personify evil in the public mind. And, of course, the one we all think of is Osama bin Laden. Now, this man probably is very evil, if he's still alive, but they're not just interested in single villains. They want to villainize whole nations and whole cultures. So, in the Western mind, Osama bin Laden represents all Muslims. And these professional agitators behind the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion have also villainized Roman Catholicism and the Pope. Everywhere we see propaganda villainizing the Pope, and their objective is to do this and to villainize all Catholics as well. Now, we're not completely out of this picture either, because by villainizing George Bush the way they have done, where the whole world hates George Bush and America, has also cast a cloud over Christianity, because the world relates George Bush with evangelical Christians. Whether we want to believe it or not, he is representing us and the gospel of Jesus Christ to the world. Even though he's a member of Skull and Bones, even though his profession of faith is bogus, the world is now believes that Christians are warmongers and aggressors and wicked people, especially the Islamic nations, the Muslims. Now, can we imagine what kind of a witness this is to Muslims of Jesus Christ? But this is the objective of the learned elders of Zion. Now, they are setting up a system of counterfeits for the tribulation period. Now, these are characters and events and other factors of the tribulation period, what we know as the tribulation period, that they will then cast down as the Antichrist, the false prophet, the mark of the beast, etc., all of the important entities of the tribulation period, and they will cast these down at mid-tribulation, and they will present their own Christ as the real Christ, and they will present his prophet as the prophet Elijah, or else the prophet John, and they will present their what is the real mark of the beast as God's mark for the masses to take. And at this point, these conspirators who have villainized all of the mankind will present themselves as the peacemakers to the world. Now, I want to talk about a little bit about who these conspirators are. I've talked about this in previous radio broadcasts. The protocols of the elders, of the learned elders of Zion, of the 33rd degree, these 300 or so men are Kabbalist Jews. And I prefer to call this not a Jewish conspiracy, but because by no means do they represent all of Jewry. I prefer to call it a Zionist conspiracy, and Zionist with an S, and I'm going to explain that in a little while. But it doesn't matter. Let me just say that there is a lot of disinformation abounding in the churches and across the internet about the events, the personages of the tribulation period. But it doesn't matter what information an organization or a ministry is providing. If they are portraying the fundamental nature of the conspiracy as a Gentile conspiracy, they are deceiving you about the nature of the conspiracy, because the leaders of this conspiracy are Kabbalist Jews, and their objective in this conspiracy is to wipe out the Gentiles, and not only the Gentiles, but also their own brethren, the Jews, who will receive Jesus Christ at his second coming. Now, to do this, they, of course, infiltrated the Gentile societies and cultures and are, in many cases, leading them, if not most. So, the prophet Daniel, when he is talking about the end time and he's describing his visions, God repeatedly told Daniel that the prophecies are about thy people. The tribulation period is all about the Jewish people and God's dealing with them. And most of the Gentiles do not understand the ancient schism which occurred in Israel that goes back not only to the time of Solomon, but even before then, when the tribe of Dan migrated to the northern section of Israel. And the reason that the tribe of Dan did this was because they were drawn to the idolatry of the Canaanites. And they were drawn to Mount Hermon, which Deuteronomy 4:48 calls Mount Sion. That's Sion with an S. And this is to be differentiated from Mount Zion, which is in Jerusalem. And the tribe of Dan adopted the pre-flood Baal worship of the Canaanites. These were the descendants of Ham and his son Canaan, and who occupied the northern area of Palestine at Mount Hermon, Sion. And Mount Hermon is located at the 33rd degree, both latitude and longitude. So that should tell us a lot about why the Masons have the 33rd degree as their highest degree, why sacred sites are located at the 33rd degree latitude and longitude globally, because all of these 33rd degrees, these occult numbers, are symbols of Mount Hermon. And the reason that they venerate Mount Hermon is because this was the area in northern Israel, the Canaanite area, where the fallen angels descended upon the earth and mated with human women. And this was what led God to judge the world with the great flood. Now, these people, these Freemasons, these Zionists, the whole occult underground that today venerates the 33rd parallel, the 33rd degree, they all, the agenda is to revert mankind back to the pre-flood civilization, which they believe was unjustly judged by God. And I've written a whole report on this, the death of the Phoenix, why the United States must be destroyed in order to bring back, to resurrect the lost civilization of Atlantis. And I just refer you to our website to that report, because this is the ultimate objective of the Kabbalist Jews. These were the Jews who descended from those who were carried off to Babylon, and when they returned to Babylon, returned to Israel from Babylon, many of them brought with them the Babylonian mystery traditions, and they never gave them up. They have passed them on orally to their descendants. Lo, these many centuries, Lucifer worship is alive today because of them in the Western world. So now I would like to just talk about the impact of the Tribe of Dan on modern Freemasonry. Of course, I believe that this is the hidden hierarchy of Freemasonry. A rabbi who lived in the mid-1800s, Rabbi Isaac Meir Wise, was a major pioneer of Reformed Judaism in America, and he made this statement: Freemasonry is a Jewish establishment whose history, grades, official appointments, passwords, and explanations are Jewish from beginning to end. And if you look at the rites of Freemasonry, they're all based on King Solomon, the Royal Arch. All of these rites harken back to the days of Solomon, who was the apostate king of Israel, who allowed pagan worship in the temple and who built the high places to Ashtoreth and led the whole nation of Israel into idolatry. And the pyramid, okay, now I want to quote from a former Mason. Name is Harmon Taylor, and he wrote a very good article on the pastor and Freemasonry. He's a pastor who was once a Freemason. And he made this observation about the capstone on the pyramid. Would it be idle speculation to suggest that the missing capstone of this pyramid represents the elite, the three final and secret degrees, seeing but not being seen? And this is exactly what the learned elders of Sion of the 33rd degree are about. They are not seen. They are the hidden capstone. But they see everything, and they control everything. Now, Leon de Posins, in his book, The Secret Powers Behind the Revolution, talked about this very hidden supreme command of Judeo-Freemasonry. He wrote, according to well-informed sources, there is in the B'nai B'rith a superposition of secret societies ending in a single governing power. Above the B'nai B'rith are the B'nai Moshe, then the B'nai Zion, and finally the hidden center of supreme command, which we believe is the Priori de Zion, or the Elders of Zion. Now, in his book, The Secret Holocaust, Eustace Mullins explained that during the 19th century, Albert Pike signed a secret treaty with Armand Levi of the B'nai B'rith to merge Gentile and Jewish Freemasonry, but that this treaty was to remain a secret, and that Gentile Freemasons were never to know that they were actually under the control of world Jewry, under the control of the B'nai B'rith, which, of course, is under the B'nai Zion and the Supreme Command, the Priori de Sion. And initiates into the upper levels of Freemasonry were bound to secrecy about this treaty. Now, the secret doctrine of the Zionists, I believe, is that they are conducting a secret holocaust themselves. And this is a holocaust of the Gentiles, because these Kabbalist Jews believe that they are divine, that they descended from these angels, and that their bloodline is divine, and that the Gentiles are mere animals. And so they are carrying out a secret holocaust, but, of course, only the insiders know about this. And what they do is they leave their occult signature whenever they carry out one of these pre-planned disasters, like the Columbine massacres, like 9/11. They leave, they are all indoctrinated in the Jewish Kabbalah, in occult numerology, which they call gematria. And so they leave these numbers in the media when these events are described to let the insiders know that this is an event that was orchestrated by the highest level of Judeo-Freemasonry, the Priori de Sion. And I would just like to talk a little bit about Columbine again and another event that is more recent. You have to kind of train yourself to look for these occult signatures or you will miss them. The average person who reads an article is not looking at the numbers necessarily, but it's a good idea to start not only numbers but pictures and all of the aspects of, I've started watching TV ads because a lot of information is given in these ads. And what has happened is we only recognize that after the event has happened. But it's kind of nice to know that maybe some of these things can be anticipated in connection with other evidence that they are planning something on a major scale. So Cutting Edge, I believe, had a report where they showed a map of North and South America and a six-pointed star connecting places where the occult societies had carried off their planned disasters, events. The school shootings marked an X across the United States. There were six school shootings. But that there were other crises that took place, disasters on this six-pointed star. Now, the Waco disaster, Oklahoma City, the JFK Jr. plane crash was on it, the TWA Flight 100, John Benet Ramsey and Gianni Versace. Also, the Columbine shootings were on this six-pointed star. Now, I don't believe Cutting Edge made the connection of the six-pointed star to the Jewish Kabbalists. They may have, but I don't remember that. But the Columbine event is interesting because the two Columbine shooters, Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris, were, although they were portrayed as neo-Nazis, they were both actually part Jewish. Both of their mothers were Jewish. And this, I think, puts a whole different cast on the Columbine shootings. It was not a neo-Nazi event against Christians. Of course, there's some question about the victims and whether or not they were Christians as well. Now, the movie, there was a movie made about this Columbine event called Don Anna. I haven't seen it, but I read about it in this expose on our website. Don Anna was one of the mothers of one of the victims, Lauren Townsend, and she appeared also on the Oprah Winfrey Show. And she may have made much of the fact that her daughter, Lauren Townsend, appeared to her as a hawk. Now, anyone who's not indoctrinated or has researched the occult wouldn't think much of this. But the occultists, when they take their initiation rites, they are taught that in the initiation they are united with Horus. Horus, the symbol of Horus, is the hawk. And Horus, of course, is the savior of Egypt, the Egyptian mystery religion. Now, what she is telling her audiences, those who are in the know, was that Lauren Townsend was reincarnated as Horus the hawk, because initiates believe that when they die, they will be reincarnated, united with Horus, and reincarnated and return, and they will be seen as reincarnated with Horus the hawk. Now, the general opinion was that Columbine was probably a neo-Nazi event that was orchestrated for the purposes of bringing about gun control. But I don't think so. I think that Columbine was about mobilizing a youth revolution, because that is exactly what has happened, and mobilizing Joel's army. Columbine was not about left-wing liberalism, but it was about fomenting right-wing fascism, which we see developing, coming about in our own country at a very fast pace today. Now, the second event I would like to talk about is something that happened just last week in the Red Sea. An Egyptian ferry was sunk in the Red Sea shortly after it departed from the port at Duba. And as I read the first article that came out about this, I was looking for this occult signature, because I'm becoming more and more aware that the signature is there if you just look for it. Now, this event happened on February 3rd of this year, which is within the window of the Imbolc, the Druidic feast, which involves human sacrifice. This Egyptian fairy, well, let me read you just the first sentence. The first paragraph of the very first article, I think this was the first article that came out about this, the sinking of this ferry. The Al Salam Boccaccio 98, that's the name of the ferry, has a capacity of more than 1,400. A ferry carrying about 1,400 people, most of them Egyptians, has sunk in the Red Sea. 14 bodies and about 100 survivors have so far been pulled from the water. Egyptian official said. Now, I was thinking about that number 14 and wondering, well, my first thought was this Egyptian burial in the Red Sea sounds strangely like what happened to the Egyptians in the Red Sea several millennia ago when Moses led the children of Israel out of Egypt. And then I noticed the number 14, and I was trying to figure that out. And then I decided to look in Exodus to see if I could find out anything from that event in the Old Testament. Well, lo and behold, the chapter in which Moses led the children out of Egypt and the Egyptians were buried in the Red Sea is chapter 14 of Exodus. And I believe that this was an Israeli Mossad operation. They were sending a signal to Jews everywhere, and especially to Kabbalists, that the Israeli agenda, that the Jewish Kabbalist agenda is right on course, and they probably have some very bad events in the planning for Egypt, and this is just the start. Now, I read an article that speculated what probably happened with this event. I'm just going to read from that article what really happened. The Israeli Mossad probably loaded a truck full of phosphorus and magnesium, which are extremely difficult to put out, onto the ferry. They used this to start a massive fire when the ship was between ports. This was most likely used in conjunction with a small bomb near a boiler on the starboard side. Israel had ships in the area, but Egypt told them to stay away. The ship had recently had maintenance work done to it in an Israeli port. Crew members battled over the blaze, but it kept reigniting, they said. The ship developed a list, and within minutes it rolled over. Everything points to Israel. Trucks carry magnesium, fires that restarted, four vehicles involved. The ridiculous story that a captain sailed away from port for 2 hours while the fire burned, and that captain deserted by commandeering a lifeboat. This ship suffered a catastrophic failure, and that's why no SOS was sent. This also follows on the heels of Egypt Air 990, Taba, Luxor, and the massacre at Saham al-Sharif. This story is too convoluted to be believed. The ship caught fire within minutes of leaving Duba, but the captain sailed on. When the fire got out of control, the captain commandeered a lifeboat, and the ship developed a mysterious list and quickly rolled over. This is set in the same tone as Egypt Air 990, where New York newspapers said a pilot went insane and drove a Boeing 767 into the ocean as he screamed, "Allah Akbar, Allahu Akbar," which means in Arabic, "God is great." And here you see what appears to be an Israeli operation where they are blaming it on the Egyptians, just as they did that Egypt Air Flight 990, and portraying them as either totally evil or crazy. Now, this Egypt Air Flight 990 actually crashed on Halloween, October 31st, 1999. And this was part of the six-pointed star diagram that was superimposed over the map of North and South America. So it was part of that North American hexagram disaster area. And it was also 25 miles from where John F. Kennedy Jr.'s plane went down. So these occult signatures are everywhere if we just look for them, but it's not enough to say that this is an occult signature. You have to see that occult numerology comes out of Jewish Kabbalism, which is gematria, and that these events are orchestrated by a high level of Jewish Kabbalists who have an agenda, which I've described in many of my previous broadcasts and reports, These are the Kabbalist Jews who have rejected Jesus Christ as the Messiah. They want to set up their own Messiah in Israel, and they are using the whole Gentile world to get back to Israel, and not only to set up their own Messiah for their own purposes, but for world domination. Now, what the Jewish Kabbalists have done is to mask their conspiracy with Gentile counterfeits. And we're in the period where the Zionist conspirators are promoting multiple counterfeits through a massive disinformation operation. They are setting up counterfeits of the Antichrist, the false prophet, the mark of the beast, and others, which they will then cast down at mid-tribulation. And part of the deception has to do with the timing of the tribulation events. And they have developed deceptive eschatologies to do this. Now, eschatology is the study of end-time events. And some of these eschatologies I'm going to just talk about briefly. One of them, of course, is amillennialism. This comes out of the Calvinist Reformed movement, the amillennial eschatology. One of the key doctrines of this eschatology is that God is finished with the Jews. The church is the new Israel. God is never going to have further dealings with the Jews as a separate people. But what amillennialism does is to obscure the role of the Jews in the end-time deception. If you talk to people who are Calvinists, who are Reformed, most of them don't even realize that we are in the end times. They have been told by their teachers and their pastors that Jesus is just going to return. There's no tribulation. There's no Antichrist, false prophet. All of that is just a false teaching, and that Jesus is just going to come back. And in fact, he's going to come back when they have brought about the kingdom of God on this earth. So they're working very hard to do this, which of course is just helping out the Antichrist to set up his beast system. And in fact, Calvinism and Reformed theology is a doctrine that has been put out by these Zionists to further their agenda among the Christian churches. Now, you also have false applications of dispensational theology, and this is the counterfeiting of, or the promoting of counterfeits of the Antichrist, false prophet, the mark of the beast, and Mystery Babylon. These types of false teachers, they hold to dispensational theology, but then they are promoting counterfeits. They're not telling you who these personages and different facts of the tribulation, what they really are. Then there is the debunking of premillennial dispensationalism, and this is an essential part of the end-time deception. They must discredit premillennial dispensationalism. And I want to read a part of the debunking. These change agents in the church have told Christians that premillennial dispensationalism is a recent invention, that this was invented by John Nelson Darby, that it was unknown before his time. They bring Edward Miller, who was a Millerite heretic, a crazy man who started a cult back in Darby's time. And this is what they do to discredit premillennial dispensationalism. But actually, premillennial dispensationalism is not a recent invention. It was held by the church fathers, and I want to read an excerpt from Irenaeus, one of the church fathers who lived in the second century AD. I want to read from his book, Against Heresies, Book 5, which taught premillennial dispensationalism to the early church. And I don't know if I have time to read it before the break. I'll just start to read it, and if I'm cut off, I'll just continue it after the break. Irenaeus wrote in the 2nd century, "For in as many days as this world was made, in so many thousand years shall it be concluded. And for this reason the Scripture says, thus the heaven and the earth were finished, and all their adornment. And God brought to a conclusion upon the sixth day the work that he had made. And God rested upon the seventh day from all his work. This is an account of the things formerly created, as also it is a prophecy of what is to come. For the day of the Lord is as 1,000 years. And in 6 days created things were completed. It is evident, therefore, that they will come to an end at the 6,000th year." And then Irenaeus goes into describing the tribulation period, where the nations who did not of themselves raise up their eyes unto heaven, nor return thanks to their Maker, nor wish to behold the light of truth, and that how God judged these nations during the tribulation period. And then he states, "And therefore, when in the end the church shall be suddenly caught up from this, it is said, there shall be tribulation such as not has been since the beginning, neither shall be. For this is the last contest of the righteous, in which, when they overcome, they are crowned with incorruption." So there he is describing the tribulation that has not been seen since the beginning of the world, neither shall be. He's describing the translation of the church to be with Christ. And then he goes on to talk about the Antichrist. Now, the Calvinists, the Reformed, deny the tribulation. And, of course, they call the Antichrist the Pope, but the Pope's been around for years. But Irenaeus has this to say about the Antichrist. "But when this Antichrist shall have devastated all things in this world, he will reign for 3 years and 6 months and sit in the temple at Jerusalem, and then the Lord will come from heaven in the clouds, in the glory of the Father, sending this man and those who follow him into the lake of fire, but bringing in for the righteous the times of the kingdom, that is the rest, the hallowed seventh day, and restoring to Abraham the promised inheritance, in which kingdom the Lord declared that many coming from the east and from the west should sit down with Jacob and Isaac and Adam." And here he is describing the millennium, which the amillennialists deny.
Barbara?
Yes.
It's time to take the break.
Okay.
Okay, you're doing such a great job, and we're going to take about a 3-minute break here.
Okay, thank you. I'll be back.